G'day, Dr. Carl here. Back in 1986, I could not wait to see teacher Krista McAuliffe on the Space Shuttle Challenger launch into space.
Obviously a major malfunction.
We could not believe what we were seeing. The Challenger Legacy. To hear more, search for science fiction and look out for The Challenger Legacy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Five years ago, two campers went missing in Victoria's High Country, Carol Clay and Russell Hill. After a massive police investigation, former Jetstar pilot Greg Lynn was charged with both of their murders, and then a jury found him guilty of Carol's murder, but not Russell's. Greg Lynn appealed his conviction, and now a judge has ordered he face trial again for Carol Clay's murder. I'm Stephen Stockwell. Welcome to this special episode of The Case Of.
This case is one of the biggest we've seen in a decade.
Melbourne man Greg Lynn has been sentenced to more than 30 years jail for murdering retiree Carol Clay.
She was shot in the head during a dispute that took place at a remote Victorian campsite.
Greg Lynn has admitted to destroying evidence, burning the campsite and their bodies.
For months, Greg Lynn's lawyers have warned that an appeal was coming.
The court has concluded that the application for leave to appeal conviction should be granted and the appeal allowed.
Greg Lynn's appeal was heard late last year when we were in the final stages of our Toya's Murder series. But we heard your call for us to break down this stunning turn of events. And Greg Lynn was back in court this week, so we'll get to that shortly. But first, I mean, I talk about drama in the courtroom quite a bit, but there really are few moments as dramatic as a conviction being overturned and a retrial ordered. Sasha Payne is an ABC reporter in Melbourne who was in the room when this happened to Greg Lynn. Sasha, welcome to The Case Of.
Thanks for having me, Stocky.
Before we talk about how we got to this point, what was that moment like in the courtroom when the retrial was ordered?
Yes, well, it was in the Court of Appeal in Melbourne last December, and it was a very brief hearing. We probably took more time getting into the room than we were actually in the room. It was packed. It's quite a small courtroom, the Court of Appeal, or the room that was held in. There were journalists, of course. There were members of the family of Greg Lynn and members of the family of Carol Clay and Russell Hill, and it was very tense. This has been a long time coming. It's been a very long process. As you said, March 2020 is when they first went missing, and we're talking about December 2025. When the Court of Appeal handed down its judgment, it was like all the air had been sucked out of the room. It was a moment of stillness and then obviously disbelief for many people and, of course, relief for Greg Lynn and his team.
Yeah. For a bit of background, before we kind of get too deep into where we are here, can you give me the kind of quick version of who Greg Lynn is, if people, you know, kind of aren't aware of him prior to this?
Well, Greg Lynn is a former Jetstar pilot. We've heard that a lot. He's 59 years old. He likes hunting. He likes camping. He would camp in the Wanangatta Valley frequently on his own and go hunting. And in March 2020, two people that were camping near him went missing before police arrested Greg Lynn, questioned him, and he was charged with the murder of Russell Hill and Carol Clay.
And just to kind of geographically place us in this, because one of the things I struggled with when I first moved to Victoria was where all of this happened. This is in like the northeast of Victoria, in like the kind of high country around, like sort of towards the bottom of like the Snowy Mountains and stuff, right?
It's not actually in the high country. It's not in the mountainous bit, if you like.
Right.
It's a valley. Wanangatta Valley is the area where these deaths occurred. I've actually been four-wheel driving and camping there myself. It's very bushy. It's very remote. It's difficult to get to. Mm. And that's why people love it, because it's a beautiful, relaxing place, lots of flora and fauna. Carol Clay and Russell Hill loved it there, and Greg Lynn loved it there. It's a beautiful place to go camping, and many people enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an incredible place, and it's such a beautiful landscape to have something so horrific happen in, the death of these two people in that area. Greg Lynn is charged and tried for these murders. He is not convicted of Russell Hill's murder, but he is convicted of Carol Clay's murder. Have I got that right?
That is correct, yes. Yeah. He was charged with both murders, but acquitted of the murder of Russell Hill.
Yeah. And, I mean, the defence appealed almost straight away, didn't they?
Yes. We didn't get our answer, obviously, until December last year. Mm. But there was very clearly they wanted to appeal on a number of grounds. The Court of Appeal allowed what they called a number of serious irregularities that constituted a substantial miscarriage of justice. So that's why they ordered the conviction to be quashed, that one conviction for the murder of Carol Clay, and for a retrial to be held. That is going to be prosecuted all over again. So basically we start at the beginning.
Yeah. Can you take me back to the appeal grounds and just run me through what the kind of the 4 points that the defence initially submitted to kind of try and overturn this on?
Well, we'll get into detail about some of these later, but the four original appeal grounds were Brown v Dunn, which is a British case law from 1893. so it was established a fair while ago.
Yeah.
That's basically a rule around fairness. So that mm-hmm. was one of the major appeal grounds. There was also some of the evidence of a firearms expert from the police who was called on during the trial, and some appeal grounds around the way he was questioned mm-hmm. during the trial. And they also the defence took issue with the jury deliberations process. They said that the jury travelled down an impermissible path to arrive at the guilty verdict. So basically they argued that the jury couldn't have come to the conclusion that they did, having seen all the evidence that they did during the trial. And basically that was because during the opening address pre-trial and in the early stages of that trial, the prosecution said the circumstances for the motive could not actually be known, what the motive was for Greg Lynn. But towards the end of the trial, the prosecution started to argue that Mrs. Clay was murdered because she saw Mr. Hill die. And the appeal court said that that was basically plucked from the air, is the way they described it. There was also some issues around the guilty verdict being unsafe and unsatisfactory, and that the sentence, this was part of their grounds, that the sentence was manifestly excessive. Mm. That is, he was given 32 years with a 24-year non-parole period, essentially for a single murder. And Dermot Dan argued that that was the highest echelon of sentencing for what was a single murder that was without premeditation. So they were some of the grounds that the defence appealed on. And they appealed the sentence and the conviction, but obviously once the conviction was overturned, the Court of Appeal said clearly we don't need to look at the sentence because we're starting again.
Yeah, right. And, you know, you mentioned before that the appeal was upheld on two grounds. I want to dig into the exact reasons for, you know, kind of each of them individually, but just quickly, what were those two grounds?
Well, the two that they upheld was Brown v Dunn and the questioning of the two witnesses, Greg Lynn and the firearms expert. So that was what they upheld.
Yeah. I appreciated the explanation of why the impermissible pathway wasn't allowed. The language that you see from judges every now and then, you know, something being plucked from thin air, is just so beautiful to see articulated in these kind of documents and these kind of judgments. I do really want to talk about Brown v Dunn because I've heard this referenced in a few different places since doing this podcast. And, you know, it's, as you say, it's a precedent from so long ago. What is this? What's happened? Why is this a reason for there to be a retrial?
It's lovely, isn't it, the way in courts lawyers love to throw these things around, and we're all sitting there going, oh, of course, Brown v Dunn. Oh, yes, I know it well. But we've learned what Brown v Dunn is since then because we don't know all the precedents.
Yeah.
Yes, as we mentioned, it was a British court case in 1893. Basically, it's a rule around fairness in cross-examination. That's the main thing to know about it.
Mm.
What it's arguing is that it can be established that it's unfair to deny the witness the chance to explain a point that then is then used to invite the jury to disbelieve their evidence.
Right. So what's happened with the in this trial around that?
Well, basically what happened, what the Court of Appeal upheld, was that in the closing address to the jury, so right at the end of the trial, the prosecution made submissions challenging the credibility of the evidence given by Greg Lynn and this other witness, the firearms expert, without ever putting those matters to them. So they essentially raised new points without giving them a chance to respond to them.
Right.
And the Court of Appeal found that that occurred even though there were repeated objections by defence and warnings from the trial judge. So they were warned not to do it, but they kept doing it.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons that it was upheld. And Brown v. Dunn says that it's unfair to ambush a witness. So basically take them by surprise, bring in a new concept at that point, and that if the opposing side intends to contradict or discredit the evidence, the witness says while in the box, the witness should get a chance to explain their position, and that that didn't happen. So the appeal court found that Mr. Lynn should have been given an opportunity to respond to the evidence around his post-offence conduct, so what he did after the two campers died.
Right.
The other problem with the witness that the appeal judges upheld was that the prosecuting counsel unfairly attacked the reliability and credibility of the firearms expert witness, and that was Senior Constable Paul Griffiths. So they didn't put the relevant matters to him to give him a chance to respond. So what the Court of Appeal found was that that approach wrongly invited the jury to ignore evidence which was actually potentially favourable to Greg Lynn, so that represented a significant departure from fairness. So basically it wasn't fair.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, the way that they're kind of like going into the detail, into the weeds of these various examinations and looking at what was said after them and in closings and all of that is fascinating. It's so closely watched and can be the grounds to overturn an entire conviction, as we're seeing in the case of Greg Lynn. You know, just talking about Greg Lynn and his evidence, what exactly was the point that wasn't put in that then was talked about in the closings?
So basically the prosecution didn't ask him enough questions. They didn't allow him the opportunity to clarify his perspective. And what the Court of Appeal found was that the Crown Prosecutor made several allegations in that closing address, so right at the end of the trial, that he never put to Greg Lynn while he was giving evidence. So that means he's basically said that stuff without saying to Mr. Lynn, do you deny this?
Right.
So he never had a chance to explain himself and didn't have a chance to respond. And what the Court of Appeal judges actually said was, and this is from their judgment, unhappily we have concluded that the conduct of prosecuting counsel so compromised the fairness of the applicant's trial that a substantial miscarriage of justice resulted. And that's why they said ultimately in those circumstances the applicant's conviction for murdering Mrs. Clay cannot be permitted to stand. So that's how unfair the Court of Appeal thought it was.
Yeah, and talking about the firearms expert as well, I mean, you know, when Greg Lynn is giving evidence, you know, I mean, it's unusual for a defendant in a murder trial to be giving evidence in the first place. So that's drama in itself. But, you know, you have the defence barrister doing the evidence in chief, then you have a cross-examination from the prosecution, and then potentially a re-examination from defence if they want to kind of clarify anything that's come up. In the defence of the firearms expert, he would have been a prosecution witness, so prosecution would have gone first, then the defence would have had their chat where they've talked about, oh, you know, is this situation plausible? And he said, yes, you know, that could have happened. And then, you know, should the prosecution have come back and then got him to clarify what he was saying before then kind of using that in their closing, or kind of writing him off in the closing effectively?
Yeah, basically. They just took the reading of it that it was flawed, and that's what they invited the jury to think. So they didn't really allow the possibility that he could have actually been correct. And, of course, the firearms expert wasn't there. He wasn't in the Wanungatta Valley. So everything he's doing is based on his knowledge of firearms and the trajectory of bullets. So it's all possibilities and probabilities. So I guess this was really about clarifying the exact probability of the gun going off in the way that he had said that it went off.
You know, Sasha, you've talked us through all of these reasons so beautifully. I mean, Who are the people making this decision, though? Like, what does this room look like, and how does this unfold? You got like one bloke sitting at the front, and then, you know, I can't imagine there's a jury in this space. How does this unfold?
Yeah, it's a little bit different to a Supreme Court trial or a Supreme Court courtroom. Mm. It's a beautiful room. The Court of Appeal. It's wood panelled. It's very old. I was sitting next to an author who's been following this trial, who commented on the lights and how beautiful they were. It's a gorgeous room. It's very tightly packed, as I mentioned. Mm. There's a bench. There's three judges at the bench, high up at the end of the room. And one of my biggest complaints about the court is you can't hear people. They're a long way away. So everyone's listening very intently. Mm. And like I was saying before, it's so still and quiet in that room. Mm. Greg, we're all in place, the media, members of the family. Greg Lynn is brought in. He was very calm. Obviously, the family very nervous, everyone very nervous. Mm. A lot was riding on this decision. Yeah. The Court of Appeal judges come in. There's three of them. There was the president of the Court of Appeal, Justice Karen Emberton, Justice Philip Priest, and Justice Peter Kidd. Mm. So they are the ones who deliver their judgment. It was really brief. I looked back at my notes last night, and I barely even took half a page of notes. It was so fast, and it was just pulling the Band-Aid off. We found out very quickly that the conviction had been set aside and there would be a retrial.
Yeah.
Obviously a devastating moment for the families who had been through so much and will need to go through a lot of it again. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of relief for Greg Lynn and his legal team and his family that this will be tried. But of course, Greg Lynn can't be tried again for the murder of Russell Hill because he was acquitted of that charge.
Yeah, okay. I actually remember when I found out about the retrial being ordered, I was in a record with Chris Tester for the case of Toya's murder. And Chris, at the end of the record, mentioned that we had our next case ordered, and I asked why, and he'd been watching ABC News Channel and had just seen the retrial news appear there. So, yeah, kind of having it pass through the case of Grapevine back to me. What happens from here, Sasha? How does all this work?
Well, we basically start from the beginning. So a new trial has been ordered. There's going to be directions hearings. There'll be many more hearings before an actual trial begins. And there was, in fact, a hearing yesterday relating to this case.
Yeah, actually, Greg Muller's the case law supervising producer. We had a free morning. So we popped into the Supreme Court. Dermot Dan, his barrister, representing him at that hearing. Different Crown prosecutor to the first trial as well, we heard from in that. Did much come out of that hearing?
We can't talk about a lot of what was in that hearing.
Yeah. Any idea how long it will take for us to get to a retrial?
The short answer is no. There will be many more hearings. There will be many more meetings. A lot of it we won't be able to report.
Yep.
And the process essentially has started again, and there will be lots of discussion before we get to an actual trial. Mm. And the next hearing is going to be in late July.
Yeah. Great. Just thinking of the timelines of courts, right? You know, if we've got another directions hearing in, you know, at the end of July, you've got to get through all the pre-trial. There's so much to discuss and kind of be worked out in these conversations. It seems like a long bow to be expecting a retrial in 2026, maybe even the first half of 2027. So we'll see where we get to with all of that. Sasha Payne, thank you so much for joining us on The Case Of.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Stocky.
We will be back in your feeds on Tuesday next week. We had been hoping to tell you about our next trial very, very soon, but we are currently rejigging some plans because we are working through the schedules of the court system. But I'll have news for you very, very soon. Grab yourself ABC Listen. You can find that either on the web or in the App Store or whatever little nightmare cube you carry around in your pocket, and you'll be at the front of the queue when we can bring you some more detail on that. But regardless of what happens with that trial, we will be back in your feed on Tuesday. The Case Of is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. This episode was reported by Sasha Payne and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. Thank you so much to the ABC legal team, to the Victoria Newsroom, and also to Audio Studios manager Eric George for helping us make this program, helping us make this show. This episode was produced on the land of the Wurundjeri people.